Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver and Al Warren.
106.5 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. David Dollar Store Dave is in the room.
I am here.
Yeah, now today, of course, we're going to have a great guest, a returning guest. He's talking about his new series. This time you got to interact a lot more, Dave, because he was really upset last time you were on. You didn't say enough to him. So let's see. We've got Ron Chepsik. So thanks for being here, Ron.
Thanks for inviting me, Al.
You've got Paraiso Blanco. The series coming out now, or it's out now. So let's talk about this television series. So how did it come about you got into the story?
Yeah. Paraiso Blanco, it means white paradise. It's a 30-part television series, and all the episodes have been shot. The first season is streaming now on VIX television, which is out of Mexico. And it started about a year and a half ago. And it's now the biggest Spanish language streaming service in the world. How I got this, one day I woke up and checking my email, and I had this email from Caracol Television, which is a big television network in Colombia. And it was from a vice president, and she says that they were working on a project involving Carlos Slater, and they saw that I had a book on them, and they'd be interested in talking about optioning it. And, you know, it was interesting because I've had like five or six of my books optioned, and it was the last book I probably thought that would be optioned. And of course, I'm going to say yes. So I said yes. And we set up a telephone call, and we discussed it. And then she said that they wanted to option it. And so I talked to my manager, and I put him in touch with her, and they worked out a deal. And the series was already in production. It was going on, and they needed some intellectual property, I guess, to make it a little bit more prestigious. And so that's why they were interested in my book. And it was great. It was great working with them. I mean, everything was fantastic, especially they paid the money on time, too, which was, you usually have to wait and wait and wait, but they were really on the ball. And I have a connection to Colombia. I'm married to a Colombian, and my wife's there now. She's been sick, and so she's getting a treatment there. So I went to see her, and I ended up going to the Caracol Studios and meeting everybody. And we signed the contract March 1st of last year. And then I came back again about 3 months later, and they were filming. And I sat in on the 10th episode, which was really fascinating. they shot this one scene six times, and there was like five words said in the whole scene, and I couldn't understand why, you know, what was wrong with it. And I asked the director, I was sitting beside the director, and he said one of the guys had mispronounced a word. So he shot it six times, and I got a chance to meet Sebastian Osorio, who's the who plays Carlos later in a series, a really outstanding actor, up and coming actor. I think he's going to be a crossover star because he can speak English well, and he's very charismatic, and he played the role of Carlos great. So I got a chance to meet him. We discussed the movie about an hour. He asked me about the character. And, you know, what was he like and all that. And, you know, if I had met him and all that. And, I left Columbia and then I went back home. And then last Christmas, I went and I saw the pilot, episode. They set it up. They hadn't done the credits on it yet, but they showed the pilot. And, it was really amazing because, in the opening scene, Carlos Lader is an old man. He's in prison, like in real life. He ended up in prison in the U.S. But he's in his cell, and he's sitting there, and the guard comes in and says, Carlos, you got to come out here. And you look on his lap, and there's my book. So he has my book. And then in the third scene, he's on the plane, and you get a close-up of Carlos, and you look on his lap, and there's my book.
Oh. And when you say he was an old man in the prison, was he about your age then? Or?
Yeah, well, what happened was, you know, he ended up in prison for 37 years. He was arrested in 1987, and big trial in Jacksonville. At that time, it was the biggest trial of any foreign gangster in history, American history. And he got a huge sentence. He got life plus 155 years, which was later reduced because of his testimony in the conviction of General Noriega of Panama. And he got to cut down to 55 years, life plus 55.
Before we go any further, we want to hear the love story. You were talking about getting married in Colombia.
Oh, well, yeah. That, you know, I've had a long relationship with Colombia. I go back to the late 1980s. There was a freelance writer that was arranging a press trip to Colombia, which was being sponsored by Avianc Airlines, which is the national airlines of Colombia. And the hope was that that Colombia had such a bad reputation then with the drug lords, and Escobar was on his narco-terrorism campaign. People were dying. You know, it was a really terrible time. And they thought that they could boost their tourist trade, you know, if they invited some writers and on a press trip, take them around the country, and they would go back to the U.S. and write nice articles about their experience and all that. And then on the last day of my trip there, I was leaving, and in those days, they had five security checks. Nobody trusted anybody because it was so corrupt that they had five security checks. So it would take you like maybe 4 hours to go through the line. And I knew this, and I said I was with a guide, and he had introduced me to this young lady who was interning at the hotel that I was staying. A very beautiful woman and all that. And then we sort of set up a informal decision that we would maybe get together later for coffee at night. And so anyways, we're sitting there, and he said, do you want me to call her? I said, who? He goes, that's the lady, Magdalena, the one you were talking with today. I said, I said, it's kind of late. I said, we have to get up really early to the airport and fight the security. And he said, well, it's up to you. So I thought about it, and I said, okay. So we called her like three times, and she wasn't there. And then he asked me one last time, and I said, okay, call her one time, see if she's there. And she was there. And so we got together for an hour. We had a really good time, went to a pizza place, and I came back to the States, and we started this romance. And finally, we decided to get married. I was a Canadian. I had my green card, but didn't have a passport. Citizenship. So it would have took me 5 years to get into the country. But if I got my citizenship, it'd take like 3 months. So I decided to get my citizenship, and I got that. And then, she came back, and we got married, and in Colombia, in Bogota, with her family and everything. And then we came back, I sent for her, and, we got married, and she's now living in Colombia. She's had, an operation, and she's recovering, And so I've been going back and forth to Colombia, which the country I love. It's really amazing. The country has really changed. And it's become a hotbed for retirees and tourists.
That's perfect for you.
Yeah.
Your book.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Was called Crazy Charlie, right?
Crazy Charlie.
And when you did that, did you go out and meet the actual real Carlos, or did you just write around him?
No, well, it was amazing because no one knew where Carlos was when I started writing the book. I started writing the book about 2016. I had thought about writing a book on him. In fact, I had been down at the Jacksonville courthouse where the records of his trial were, and I had made some copies of some documents and all that. But I had put it aside, and then I needed to do a book. I have to keep busy, and I thought about it, and I said, okay, I'm going to do a book on Carlos later. So I took those materials. I interviewed a guy from my radio show called Carlos Toro, and he was a boyhood friend of Carlos later, and he had a lot of good information, which I used. I interviewed the prosecutor that put him in jail, and I interviewed the the lead detective, the DEA agent that led the investigation of later that eventually caught him and brought him back to the U.S. for trial.
Whatever draws you to a story, like how do you find the story, or what brought you to, you know, Carlos, the attention to you?
Well, it's really amazing because at this point in my life, I'm pretty established and a lot of people know me, and I get a lot of people contacting me. For some reason, people consider me a crime expert now. I'm an expert on crime because, you know, I've done books and all that. And I get these letters from prison all the time. You know, somebody said, you know, I was a mass murderer. And I have this story. It takes more than being a mass murderer to get a book. You know, you gotta have much more intrigue to it on that. So I ignore a lot of them. And don't really take them seriously. But then I get a call like I did in 2020, the book that I did before Bad Henry on Jesus Ruiz Henao. He was the biggest cocaine trafficker in British history. And I got a note from his daughter, email, saying that her father was interested in, you know, maybe collaborating on a book. And she sent some clips from the internet, and I didn't know who this guy was. And I started reading the clips, and they were amazing. You know, they're calling him the Pablo Escobar of Colombia. And, you know, when he was arrested, the price of cocaine shot up 50%, you know, and because it became so, you know, so hard to get because he was taken out of circulation. And on that, and so I said, yeah. And she said, well, he's in prison. He's been in prison for 17 years. And I said, well, I'd like to talk to him. Maybe we could work something out. So he called me from Great Britain from where he was in prison. And we talked, and we got along. And he said, well, I'll be getting out pretty soon. And we can talk further about working out some kind of collaboration. And I said, okay. So anyways, he finally got released in October of 2020. And I ended up talking with him. And I went to Colombia, and I spent a week with him, interviewing him, getting a lot of information verbally from him. And it was really interesting because I went in January of 2020, and the first case of COVID was just detected in Washington, I think it was. And so it was sort of like I was cognizant of it. And then when I came back, COVID hit really big. And so that cut off any chance of traveling back to Colombia. You know what I mean? It was it'd be very difficult. So we set up an arrangement where we used email. And I told them to write out like a diary. And I called him up, and that we had some phone interviews, and then I had, of course, the background material from the internet and stuff that he sent me that he had, and we worked out a book, and the book was published, and I was on the show to discuss that, if you recall, and he was on too.
Ron, this is Dave. How did Carlos get involved in the drug trade, and what led to his rise to this drug lord status?
Well, he was a born criminal. You know, he came to the States at 16 and started off by stealing cars and shipping them back to Colombia, where his brother would sell them. And then he got caught for that, and he got sent to prison in Danbury, Connecticut. And he met a guy named George Jung. If you saw the movie Blow, it was based essentially on his story. George was a petty criminal, and he had shipped marijuana from Mexico to California using small planes. And the idea intrigued Carlos, and he said, well, if they could do that for marijuana, they could do that for cocaine. And cocaine at that time, this is the late 70s, or mid 70s, was starting to become big in the United States. And he said, well, what we'll do is we'll buy an island in the Caribbean and use that as a launch pad for planes coming from Colombia. They could land, refuel, and then fly to the U.S. and drop off their loads. So he ended up buying this island named Norman's Cay, which is about 200 miles from Florida, and there was only like 100 people on there. He chased the people off the island, and he set up his own sort of a kingdom there. He had, you know, he paved the ground for landing strips, and he brought in bodyguards, and he started to send the cocaine to the U.S. And before then, it was mainly really small time. It was piecemeal. You had couriers, you know, that were either carried the drug on them or in them, and so you couldn't really transport a lot of cocaine. So what he did was he revolutionized the distribution network for the smuggling of cocaine, and he ended up becoming incredibly wealthy. I still see they say that he's worth $2.7 billion. And I don't know if that's true or not. I think the government gets most of the drugs when someone gets caught. But he was very wealthy. They said he got he got paid 1 out of every 4 kilos that he transported to the United States. And by that time, the Medellin cartel was set up, and he became a really important part of the cartel. And that included Escobar, the Ochoa brothers, and Jose Gonzalo Rodriguez, who was another, the so-called Mexican, was the other member of the Medellin cartel.
Wow. So what would, I just noticed in some of his, like he was, you know, Carlos was pretty influenced by things like Hitler, Mein Kampf, and Machiavelli, and Hermann Heiss, yeah. And all that.
Yeah.
What was his standing, like thinking of?
Well, it's really interesting. You know, his father was German. And he came to the U.S. In the late 20s, was a really respected engineer. He helped develop the road system in Colombia. He introduced elevators to buildings, which was really a novel thing at that time. And the guy was a rabid neo-Nazi, really. And Carlos, I guess, was influenced by him, and he became a racist and a neo-Nazi. He claimed that that the Holocaust didn't claim 6 million Jews, all that sort of stuff. And he hated the United States. He would send his kilos with swastikas pasted on them to the United States. And I don't know exactly where he got this hatred of, his visceral hatred of the U.S. I think maybe because he came to the U.S. and he didn't really make it, and he sort of blamed the country for that. He ended up in prison, of course, and ended up in Connecticut.
Wow, that's strange, you know, when you see someone from Colombia and they're a racist, you know, xenophobe. And
Yeah, and he is German-American. And during the Second World War, the U.S. Government monitored Wilhelm, that's his father's first name. They were really concerned about him. He would have meetings at this hotel that he had, a small hotel, of Germans in the area. The area he came from was called Armenia. So that tells you a little bit about, you know, a lot of Germans there that emigrated from Germany, ended up in Armenia. So, but nothing happened. He wasn't arrested or anything.
So now he started the movement, the MAS, right?
Yeah, the MAS, that was a movement. What it was essentially was to retaliate against guerrillas, the so-called, it's called the M19 movement. They attempted to kidnap him and ransom. And miraculously, he escaped, but he was injured and he had to recover and all that. But he really held this against them. So he organized this organization called MAS, was Morte Sequestradores, murder to the kidnappers, death to the kidnappers. And the cartel went after the leader's family and all that sort of stuff after they kidnapped the sister of the Ochoa brothers. And finally they released her because they realized they weren't going to win the war against the cartel. The cartel was too powerful. He was a pretty good organizer. He organized the National Latin Movement, which was like a political party, and it was really fascist, really, in a lot of ways, and it was mainly designed to fight extradition against the government, which is trying would implement extradition. And he actually won a couple of seats in Parliament. And so he organized this movement called the National Latin Movement. And he actually thought that maybe someday he could be president of Colombia.
Well, what's he like now? Or is he still much the same? Or is he?
He was released in June in 2020 after, I think it was 33 years in prison, and deported to the to Germany. He has German citizenship. He's a German Colombian, and the Colombian government wouldn't take him back, but he really wanted to go to Germany. In fact, he sued the U.S. government because he claimed that they reneged on a deal that would have sent him to Germany. He had sued the government. I remember I was approached by all kinds of writers that were claiming these conspiracy theories about later. You know, they claimed that he was working for the CIA, that he was out, you know, and probably back in the drug trade. And I kept telling him, I said, no, I said, the government still has him and all that. And he really disappeared. Nothing new about him. And then in 2007, he showed up in court, and his lawyer was suing the government, saying they reneged on their promise to extradite him to Germany for his help with the Noriega conviction.
Well, it's strange, the whole thing, eh? You know, the way it all works.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, how did Leder end up in prison? What was his downfall?
His downfall. Well, the big mistake they made. This is the cartels, because they had it pretty good in the early 1980s. They were really powerful, and nobody wanted to deal with them. But they ended up killing the justice minister, and the cartels. It was ordered by Escobar, and the government, under pressure from the U.S., clamped down hard on the cartels. They went after them. And they had all kinds of military looking for them and all that. And the cartel leaders realized that it was too hot for them to stay in Colombia. So they left, and they went to Panama. And the government, of course, put pressure on Noriega to hand him over to the U.S. government, but he wouldn't do it. But then there was rumors that Noriega was going to collaborate with the U.S. government. Because he was involved with the drug trade, and he was afraid that he would be sort of maybe kidnapped, which is what happened. He was kidnapped in Panama and hauled back to the U.S. in 1989 to stand trial on that then. They realized that it was getting too dangerous to stay in Colombia, so they left and they went to Nicaragua, and the Sandinistas sort of protected them for a while, and then it all cooled down, and they came back. But by then, Leder's power was greatly reduced, and he was really a minor. He was becoming a minor player in the drug trade, and he ended up being a bodyguard for Leder, and he was involved with drugs, and I think he was getting crazy because of the drugs. He gave this incredible speech, which was televised on national television, down by the in the Amazon, by the Amazon River, where he ranted and raved about the U.S. and how he was going to destroy it, and how cocaine was going to be the weapon of mass destruction for the U.S. And you know, he denied the Holocaust, you know, the 6 million Jews, you know, not dying and all that sort of stuff. And I think Escobar saw this. And he realized that Leder was really out of control, and that it was really bad for the cartel. So it's never been proven, but I think he actually set up Leder to be captured. He was captured at a ranch in the jungle and partying. And he woke up, and there were the authorities. And within hours, he was shipped to the U.S. You know, they didn't even wait to arraign him in Colombia. They just shipped him Right to the U.S., and next thing you know, he was brought up before a judge, and he was being tried in the U.S. for drug trafficking charges.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? You know, when you're doing a story like this about a real character, a real person that's alive, and they're doing all these things. Does it ever become a struggle for you if you don't like the character you're writing about?
Yeah, I thought about that, but not really. I mean, I'm a professional writer, you know? I mean, the story, whatever it is, I'll write it. You know, I'm not gonna tamper with it. Now, that's why I like writing screenplays, you know? I'm an option screenwriter, too. Because you can take a story, a true story, and tamper with it. You know, you could develop the way you want to make it on that. But normally, I'm a professional writer, and I deal professionally with all my subjects.
Does it ever, like, when a production company like this makes a series and they use your book as a basis, does it ever sort of bother you or worry you or anything like that when they... Because in essence, they can take your book and they can sort of make the story go anywhere they want.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, the thing is, when you write your book to make a movie, it's essentially in their hands, right? And you're not going to have the same. A book cannot translate to a screen verbatim. You know, you're going to have to play with it. And I've got two scripts that have been optioned that are based on true stories, where I tampered with the story. You know what I mean? I changed things and all that. But that's very natural. I mean, that's expected. And you'll hear real complaints from viewers that, oh, God, the movie didn't go by the book and all that. And, but I don't hold that against the production company. You know, when I sell the rights, cause you're getting a lot of money, to sell the rights. When I sell the rights, that, you know, it's, they can do with what they want. Now, I was a consultant to the movie as well. And they didn't really ask me as much as I wanted them to ask me about the project. But, you'll get your input in as well, you know, to the project.
Right. Well, they, quite often they have a different intent, right? You know, they want people to stay watching the series. So they're going to focus more on a lot of the action and the crime and stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, right. Like, I watched the first 15 episodes, and they really, I think they tampered with the character, Carlos. They dealt with him more as a Lothario, you know, a womanizer in the first 15 episodes, which, I'm really curious to see how they're going to do the next 15, because they don't really deal with the political aspect of Carlos's history. They don't deal with his dislike of the U.S. They don't deal with his aspiration in politics and all that. And so the series, first 15 episodes, ends when he's the U.S. is about to get him kicked off the island. They're going to put pressure on the Bahamian government and all that. So he's going to go back to Colombia. And I'm wondering, you know, how are they going to deal with that? You know, and if not, then they're really playing with the story, because that would be the story when he went back to Colombia, is his involvement with politics.
Yeah, it's crazy. When you wrote the book, did you have a purpose in mind or a point to it?
No, it was just a quick book. You know, it's just something that I had materials and I wanted to do. I did it, and that was it. I mean, I never really expected it to be optioned, but they wanted the book, and I was just right. I was there at the right time, you know.
Do you know what? Do you know what Carlos thinks of the series or your book?
Well, that's interesting, because my manager, I got a script on later, the story called Crazy Charlie, which we've been trying to sell on that, and so we decided we would send the material to Carlos, and we got his lawyer in Miami, and you know, through the internet, we figured out who his lawyer, and we talked to him, and he said I don't know what Carlos's plans are. He's going to need some time to readjust to civilian life, but I'll send your materials, and we sent the materials to him. Nothing happened, you know. We didn't hear anything on that, and then he was on this radio show, which is really interesting. There was this woman who claimed to have written a book about Carlos with his collaboration, right? So she was invited to appear on this radio show in Bogota, and she was talking about how they did the book and all that. And then the host said, "Wait a minute, we'll we'll invite Carlos on the show to give his perspective. And there was Carlos later. And Carlos later went ballistic. You know, he said, I don't know this woman. I never collaborated with her, and I'm going to sue her.
Wow.
And during the course of the interview, he said that he had met a producer, a film producer, and they were working on a documentary, which he said during that interview that it would come out near the latter part of the year. And he said that's all he could talk about. He said because he was told to not talk about it.
So yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? The whole story.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah, I mean the whole thing how it ended up. You know, I've been trying to get some of my books. I have one now with been trying for 9 years, and this one just happened. I didn't even try it. You know, it just happened overnight.
But that's the best.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Really. You know, works out the best and stuff. So you're happy with the way it turned out?
Yeah,
way it's all gone?
Yeah, like I said, you know, they took some liberties on that. But like I said, I can live with that because, you know, I'm a screenwriter myself, and I know what they're doing. Carlos, or Sebastian Osorio, the lead actor, he plays a really amazing role. And the supporting cast is really good as well. And I met the screenwriters. In fact, I was, part of my contract, I was supposed to write an episode as part of my thing on that, but I decided not to do it because you'd have to write in Spanish, my written Spanish is not screenwriter level, so I decided not to get involved with that. But I met the two writers that worked on the series, and they did a pretty good job.
When you go through a case like this, with this particular case, was there anything that surprised you about Carlos?
You mean in the series? Well, yeah, they made him much nicer than he really was.
Oh.
You know what I mean? They made him sort of a rascally type of character, you know, rather than the anti-Semite, the neo-Nazi that he is. I don't know if he still is, but he was during the heyday of his criminal career.
Yeah, it's crazy how that is, how he was that and everything like that. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now when does first season is up, and when do they start?
I get it on my cable network, VIX. I watched the first 15 episodes, and it was well done, like I said. And I don't know when the second 15 are going to happen. There's a Wikipedia page, up, which is great, and it acknowledges that it's based on my book and all that, and. So right now I'm planning to use that to advance my career. I've talked with a producer friend, and we're going to be trying to sell the script. And I've done a pilot too as well, so a TV series or a script in English. And we still have the rights to do that, he says. So we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you're in the big leagues now.
Yeah. It's I've got like I said, there's so many different things that if they click all at once, I might have to go hide somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be like the latest Lady Gaga. You'll be.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be one of those overnight successes that took 10 years.
Lady Baba.
You know. Yeah.
Well, but yeah,
Lady Gaga.
That's you. Well, so what's next? So what are you going to do? So when you got this going on, are you able to still work? And you got other writing projects going on?
Oh yeah. I never stop worrying. I never stop working because I love what I do. I mean, I don't consider it work. You know, it's like play with me. It's like it's like a hobby that you get paid a lot of money on. And I've got so many different things. I'm working with a production company that wants me to do a script for them and on a bank heist, and so I'm working that out. I'm getting my Matthew's book made into an audible, and I'm working. I got this black gangster from Chicago that contacted me, and he's been in witness protection for 30 years, and he was a big Al Rukin back in his day, and then he had to flee for his life, and so he collaborated with the government, and his story is really interesting, and so I'm working on a contract with him. I think I'm going to do a screenplay and a book on him. And then I've got a book right now that Wild Blue Press, I'm under contract to do on a Dallas oil man that was really a con man and really interesting. We're going to do a book documentary podcast and a script on that. I'm working with a producer in Dallas.
Busy man. Well, yeah. You know, I'm not so lucky. You know, I work the drive-through.
You're not so lucky.
I work
what
the
drive-through
at night, you know.
You have to moonlight to stay.
Yeah,
to stay.
No.
To survive.
Really, but that's all right. I let people think I am. But so, yeah. Okay, so here we go. So where do people find you? I mean, besides the local bar.
Well, you can check out my website. I got www.ronchepsik, C-H-E-P-E-S-I-U-K. That's C-H-E-P-E-S-I-U-K.com. That's my website on there. You can check out me at my crime show. I got a show for the last 11 years. I invite all kinds of guests relating to crime, and that's at the Artist First, artistfirst.com. You'd go to the Artist First Network, radio network. And we're on every Thursday night. And then you can just Google me. There's about 60,000 entries on me.
Yeah, there's some real interesting ones.
Yeah.
Well, of course, we're going to have everything up on the website as well. We'll have the series. We'll have your website and everything going on.
Well,
so
great.
People can find it real easily in that. So we really appreciate you being here and talking about your latest project.
No, I appreciate you inviting me. Yeah, we're a mutual collaboration society. You're our biggest guest on my radio show. You're on more times than we're going to give you a part ownership in the.
Well, there you go. That just means I have to pay the bills, right?
Yeah. And we're going to see you. We're going to see you in November again, right?
I think so. Yeah, it's in my phone somewhere. Well, I appreciate you being here. Now the series is Paraiso Blanco, and of course the book is Crazy Charlie, and our guest is the author of that book and starter of the series here, Ron Chepsik. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, y'all. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Ron.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.